Welcome back to the Take Flight Podcast with John Melton, where we discuss travel, teaching English abroad, and maximizing your income. For those of you new to the podcast, I'm John Melton. I'm an English major. I'm a world traveler. I've taught English abroad, and I'm here to show you all of my tips and tricks. So welcome on board, and let's get this show rolling. Hello, hello. Welcome back. Long time no see. Welcome back to the Take Flight Podcast. Today, we have a very special episode as I'm joined by two very special guests. The first is my best friend, Anthony Rossetti, who accompanied me on my journey and helped get me started in this whole teaching English business to begin with. Anthony Rossetti is a host of a hot up-and-coming horror podcast called Not Another Horror Podcast. Check it out on all major platforms. And another important guest that I have today is my daughter Montana, which was the basis for me desiring to come home so badly. Because if it wasn't for her, I probably would have stayed. Let's take this story back a bit to 2014. I was a little past my mid-20s, and I'd spent the better part of my 20s in and out of old dives, National Guard armories, and gymnasiums after I finished pro wrestling training in 07, as this is the way to break into the business, wrestling in small venues. But through hard work and several years of paying my dues, setting up rings, and being in these small crappy venues, I got out of those places and worked up to bigger shows in small arenas and fairgrounds. Pro wrestling was something I dreamt of as a kid. Now I was living that dream. It was quite disruptive to my family life, though. It created trust and separation issues between my now ex-wife and I. After my marriage failed due to the stresses of the wrestling business, I was brought down to earth a bit. I had also just suffered an injury to my shoulder, so there I was, injured with no wrestling and no family. So it humbled me, and I began focusing more on the real world in 2012. Sounds a bit late, right? But it's never too late. I found myself in another relationship with a girl I dated in high school. We played house for a year, and that didn't work out either. So at this point, I felt discouraged about love, life, and myself. So I decided I would keep trying to better myself, and I applied to college. At first, the school told me I'd get financial aid to attend. However, they sent a letter asking for some verification of the number of members in my household. It had decreased by one, so I changed it on the form. Next thing you know, I was getting a letter that was telling me I wasn't getting any financial aid. I was beyond discouraged. So that's when I decided to devise a new plan. It was July 2014. It was hot and muggy in West Tennessee. Felt like I had no direction for my life. I spent so much time chasing other people that I wasn't quite sure what my own desires were. Yet I kept my ambitions high. It seemed like a weird paradox for one to be highly motivated and have no sense of direction to apply that energy. But that's who I was at the time. And professional wrestling hadn't done much for my emotional maturity. Pro wrestling caused me to have an inflated view of myself and situations outside of wrestling that I shouldn't have. I also went from one profession where I was respected to another world where I had yet to make an impression. At this point, I felt like I needed to go into hermit mode. I needed to focus on myself. I needed to rebuild. And I was constantly trying to devise my next move. Scrolling through Facebook, I noticed a wrestling fan that had added me a couple years back named Anthony. He had posted some pictures of himself teaching in China, walking on the Great Wall, and different things, different travel throughout China, going up mountains and stuff. He had been on my friends list since 2010, so I felt like I could shoot him a message without being too awkward. We introduced ourselves and talked briefly about wrestling. And then, of course, I brought up the subject of traveling to China. I asked him about the process to go to China and teach English. And throughout our conversation, we eventually became friends. Even though Anthony had already been to China, I ended up asking him if he would accompany me. Looking back, it's crucial that this happened because it's apparent he was a big key to easing my nerves. It's also worth noting that he had only been back from his previous trip for like 4 months when we got into serious talks about this. He agreed and we began planning out the process. Anthony, tell us what it was like first getting a message from me and then meeting and, you know, at the airport for the first time. I'm sure it was a little awkward.
Well, when you first messaged me, I wasn't sure what to expect. I actually ignored the message for, I think, like a few days, if you can believe that. At the time, I was already in China, and I got a lot of messages from people wanting to know why I was living there, but most importantly, how could they also live there? So it wasn't like uncommon, and honestly, it gets kind of old after a while. But the moment I started talking to you, I kind of realized you were pretty serious about it. So that made me keep contact. And when I came back to the States, I wasn't sure if I wanted to go back. In all honesty, if it wasn't for you, I probably would have not gone back. But once we finished the interviews for, you know, those schools up in Dalian and all those other places, I was actually kind of excited about it. I was excited about experiencing a new part of China with someone else. No one ever tells you about the loneliness of living in a country by yourself after the newness wears off. So it was nice to be able to have someone from, you know, your country to keep you company. When I met you at the airport, it didn't feel like odd or anything. It's kind of like I had known you for a long time, but still a funny story though, just thinking about how I went across the world with someone I met in person for the first time at the airport. I didn't know how we would mesh together or how, you know, what our chemistry would be. I think we got lucky. Yeah.
You know, looking back on it, we did get pretty lucky.
I mean, we could have gotten there and hated one another. I mean, what would we have done then? I guess we would have had to stick it out at that point. But luckily, it didn't happen that way. And I think it's, what, 5, 6 years? 7? I don't even know anymore. Anyways, years later, and we are still friends. So I guess the odds were in our favor.
I guess you could say they were. The whole process, they were. But see, Anthony informed me about a TEFL certification, which, for the most part, unless you have a bachelor's, you kind of need to add to your resume. So I needed to add it to mine since I didn't have a degree at the time. We both got these job interviews at different places and finally secured positions within our agency, and which kind of secured our position at a couple different schools. From there, the agency attempted to put us in a very rural part of China, and after we looked up some of the insects there, we kindly rejected it. At the last minute, we were offered positions in Liaoning, Yingkou, China. After the passport and visa process that seemed to take forever, we booked our flights at about $800 each, one way, and impatiently awaited the date. Anthony and I boarded my first flight that cold morning on March 1st, 2015. It was a small passenger plane that rocked and swayed with the wind. We flew out of Memphis and landed in the snowy Chicago O'Hare International Airport. We had about a 4-hour layover before we boarded the Etihad plane for Abu Dhabi. I had never traveled anywhere near this far before. And I couldn't help but wonder if I had made the right decision about leaving my parents and daughter back home. I couldn't help but feel like small towns are places where dreams die, and it's all I'd ever known. I was looking forward to this journey, as painful as it was. From here, things really picked up and started to go full speed and get exciting. We boarded the plane on Etihad to go to Abu Dhabi in the Middle East. The plane had 2 aisles, with three long rows of seats, which made it huge. You could stand up and walk around within it. There were people from all walks of life bustling and shoving their way through, bags soaring overhead as people shoved their belongings into overhead bins for the journey ahead. It was going to be a long one. Different scents of people, accents flew by in a rush as I tried to orient myself. It was all a whirlwind around me. I was seated beside the window for this leg of the journey, and Anthony would have the window seat from Abu Dhabi to Beijing. The food was delicious. We had three hot meals a day, which totally caught me off guard, seeing as this was airplane food, but it was excellent. Everything from rice biryani to chicken curry, lamb, it beat the Chex Mix on Delta for sure. Home already felt so far away that it seemed to also grow in distance inside my mind, like the old out of sight, out of mind adage. I wondered how my parents and my daughter were, and if they were carrying on with their regular days. I wondered how my daughter felt most of all, even though it was far too late to turn around. She remained close to me because I carried her picture in my wallet every day. We crossed Europe and I could see sharp snow-covered mountaintops. Then we curved downwards into the Middle East where I saw desolate mountain villages, people walking with farm animals, and desert for hundreds of miles until we finally came into Abu Dhabi and the immaculate Middle East. It was hot and dry as you would imagine. The airport was filled with beautiful shops and architecture. After a two-hour layover, we boarded our flight without any problems and began the last leg of the journey to China. Once again, I was treated to delicious food and comfortable seating arrangements. It was at this point that I noticed every other country's flight attendant seemed to be much more attractive than ours back home, albeit no less skilled. The desserts of the Middle East were delicious. They served those with all of their meals too, so it wasn't any extra. As we came down from the clouds, I could see deserts for miles, sand everywhere. Honestly, I just wanted to land in Beijing without any mishaps. I was getting tired. When Anthony and I got off the plane, we stepped into Beijing International Airport. The airport terminal was huge. It had a large, intricately designed ceiling and enormous glass windows where the sunlight pierced its way through the dense pollution and gave gentle, natural lighting throughout the whole building. Compared to the airports I passed through on the way here, this one was rather calm and almost empty. It seemed rather weird. We were really here, and it was surreal. China seemed like it only existed on TV up until that moment. There wasn't another white, black, or brown face anywhere besides Anthony and I. This is where I realized how much we take our diversity for granted back home in the States. I approached the customs counter where two uniformed Chinese soldiers were standing and waiting for my documents and passport. One was a male standing to the right of a female who was sitting at the counter and checking people in. I remember how tense their eyes felt upon me, as if something might appear on their computer screen to keep me from going through. My nerves got tense and my blood pressure rose. But all was fine, and we crossed to the other side. It was at this point that Anthony became the one getting a rough shake, though. They gave him a few extra questions about drug smuggling, and then he got the nod. Anthony followed, and we went down a large escalator that led to an entrance for a high-speed train. The train was much nicer than any train I had been on, especially back home. The ride wasn't very long at all, maybe an hour or so, because of the high speed, and we arrived at the train station to be picked up by our teaching recruiter. This whole period felt odd, like it felt like we were being rushed through a process, yet no one was there. We were just rushing to get to a destination. Once we were there, we took a tour of Beijing and Tiananmen Square. I felt like I was in an encyclopedia brought to life. Our agent Susie seemed in a hurry as she got us onto a train that took us another 5 hours to our destination. We arrived in Ningbo at nighttime. Two men, Mark and Jack, picked us up upon arrival. They snatched up our bags and we began following them through the train station and out into the parking lot. It's quite an odd situation. There was no formal introduction and they didn't tell us where we were going. Anthony and I looked at each other nervously but kind of grinning as we sped through the streets of China. It was the adrenaline rush that we had been looking for, I guess. Neon lights, bustling traffic, and enormous crowds of people as we whizzed by at top speeds. One sharp turn to the left down the alley, and then, skirt, an immediate right. I felt like Hulk Hogan had thrown me from one end of the car to the other. We finally came to a stop, and the two guys hopped out and opened our doors and told us to follow them. Nervously, we went upstairs into a private little room with just enough space for a table and two benches. They put menus in front of us, and we found some steaks. We picked those out. It was like a steak with a side of spaghetti and an egg. It was at this point that they saw the suspicion on my face and began explaining to me that I could trust them. I eased up. Turns out Jack was the husband of the principal and Mark worked in the office. Over the next week, we were moved into our apartment with the previous teacher, Luke, from New Zealand. Luke was cool. He taught us the ropes as far as classroom management. He taught us a little Chinese and how to deal with administration. He looked out for us kind of like a big brother, which I appreciated. He made sure we knew as much as we could after 6 weeks of observation and a couple of demo classes. I wouldn't say I was a professional, but I could handle my own. Anthony, how did you feel about working at English Pie and Ying Co?
Working at EP was draining on so many levels. You know, I had already worked in China before, but that was my first time at an English training center. And I had been warned before about English training centers, but, you know, I always have to learn the hard way. I didn't think it was going to be that bad at first, but I guess that was really because there was three of us at the time, you know, with the guy from New Zealand. But I'll tell anyone, if you want to teach in China or teach English in China, please aim for the public schools, please. You'll thank me later. Because those work hours at English training centers are brutal. I think like the first class was at 7, and sometimes like we would have to teach until what, 6 or 7 in the afternoon. So that's like a full work day. When you work at a public school, you have more work-life balance. You know, you get to actually see the country you're in and explore it and make new friends and meet new people instead of just being crammed up in an office and a classroom all day. I mean, I came from a country where the work-life balance was already terrible, and I wanted to get away from that. And honestly, if I wanted to be swamped in work 24/7, I would have just stayed in America, because you know how we are here. You know, we are workaholics. It's what we do. So that was kind of like, why am I even here? Like, I could just be doing this in America and not feel so like the odd man out, I guess you would say. There wasn't a specific moment when I knew Jesse was shady. I kind of got vibes from her when we first met, because the odd thing was, didn't we have an interview in a hotel? Like, in that, I think it was like a love hotel they put us in. We had like an interview in the lobby, which was weird. I mean, why are you bringing me from one country to another only to interview me in a hotel? Like, I feel like you should have mentioned that before I got on the plane.
Oh my gosh, I totally forgot about that interview in that hotel. That was so sketchy. We should have known right then it was a red flag.
But I just kind of picked up hints from her, like not letting me do certain things when the parents were around. Like, she was kind of ashamed that I was there. You know, instead of, you know, events, she would use you or Luke. Are just being harder on me for things and being more lenient with you two. But the biggest moment when I had kind of decided she was up to no good was when South Korea entered the chat.
That's right, because we knew that meant she wanted us to make technically illegal visa runs.
She just wanted me to go and come back, but she like had a whole visa plan for you. But for me, it was kind of like, oh yeah, just go and come back. So I kind of knew my days were limited. But if we're just going to be honest right now, I was not happy there anyways. I was kind of ready to go home. I mean, I had the option to stay in China, but just decided it wasn't worth my mental health. And I was kind of happy to go home because we were already working so much. We only had like one day off a week, and that was Monday. And it was just like, if I'm going to spend all my time working, I'd just rather be in America doing that, you know?
Yeah, I totally get it. We were working a lot because we got a kind of a shoddy contract. But almost a month had gone by, and it felt like I'd just stepped off the plane. It was just at that point that jet lag had actually completely gone away, not, you know, just partially. I was somewhat familiar with the surroundings finally. I hadn't gotten to have a good conversation with my daughter and my parents, though, and I felt pretty guilty. Why did I feel guilty about trying to live my life? Felt like I was doing what was best for me financially and mentally. But I couldn't stop being that homesick kid from Tennessee. It was 10 p.m. one night, and I finally got a hold of my daughter. With the time difference, it was 11 a.m. for her. We talked for a few minutes before the spotty internet began to disrupt us. By the way, a 13-hour time difference. But when the internet broke us up, it was heartbreaking. Her voice truly gave me life and kept me going. When I heard the reception break up and disappear, though, I felt like it was a representation of my presence in her life. Still couldn't shake that feeling when I left her, as if I didn't leave for any other reason. But I knew I did. China was nothing short of amazing, though. Even in a smaller tier 4 city, Chinese cities are humongous. They're all ranked on a tier system, with tier 1 being the largest, most international cities such as Shanghai and Beijing. Nevertheless, a tier 4 city in China still contained about 3 million people, with it expanding to 6 million people after they commute in for work. The food alone was worth the trip. Authentic Chinese food was something I had never experienced in America, and I'm assuming most people here haven't either. Their cuisine put ours to shame, their Chinese did, and it's only a fraction of the cost. From steamed dumplings to hot pot, or the Chinese/Korean barbecue where you cook your own food at the table. Teaching seemed to come naturally to me. It would make sense as my grandmother and 3 of her siblings were college professors. I wrote different curriculums for different ages, came up with fun games, went on field trips. I was beginning to bond with my students. Seeing the children light up as I taught them new things and playing games made me feel good inside, but I was still missing something. It was like each class I taught and grew closer to my students, the more I missed my daughter. I was giving up so much to these children. I was investing so much time and energy and getting down to play on their level. It occurred to me this was time I could be doing this with my own child. It was at that moment I knew I had a conflict of interest in my own heart.
You paint a picture in my mind. You wanna leave it all behind. In a world that's turning all the time. Nothing could stop me longing for your eyes.
Now, throughout my time teaching at English Pi and Yinko, it was a little bit different from Anthony's, but we still both had the same red flags. The owner kept asking for my passport, which is a huge red flag. Never give out your passport. It's your one ticket. I kept finding ways to avoid giving it to her, dodging the question. I knew that her parents worked for the police, and I didn't necessarily want her holding onto it in case she got mad at me. You never know what could happen. One day, she asked my teaching assistant to translate for us, and she began asking me for my passport once again. At this point, I was becoming irritated, pissed. She claimed it was for my safety, but I knew it was to keep me from being mobile, and I couldn't do that. My passport was my lifeline, and I had no intentions of parting with it. She already had a copy of it, so technically there was no need. The discussion became a bit heated until she decided to end it, with my frustration being pretty apparent. Later that same week, I managed to negotiate a raise. I felt good about it since it was no easy task. But afterwards, I thought the deal was done, and it wasn't. She then decided to fire Anthony. I was in complete shock. We both were. She could have left Anthony in a really shitty position if he wouldn't have had the money saved up. It was extremely two-faced in my eyes. It got worse as she decided to give all of Anthony's classes to me for that minimal raise she just gave me. It's like I jumped out of the pot and into the fire. I was wrecked emotionally. Was all too aware of the distance between my daughter and me now. My one friend and support system was having to leave as well. It felt like the wild ride of China was coming to a sudden halt, and it was anguishing. Now, what was your point of view, Anthony, when you had to leave? Because I know it was rough for me, man. So, how was it for you leaving Yingkou?
When I left Yingkou before you, I kind of knew that you would probably leave too. I mean, being an immigrant, and yes, I'm going to say immigrant because I have a problem with the expat term. Like, we're immigrants, y'all. Sorry to burst your bubble. But yeah, being an immigrant in a place where there's a handful of immigrants is very isolating. Not to mention the other immigrants were from other countries, so you don't have that same type of comfort. Like, yeah, I know you're moving to a country to get out of your comfort zone, but at the same time, you're human and you need that sort of connection with someone, or else it gets very isolating. And if you don't speak the language fluently, you can't really convey all your emotions, jokes, and like your whole personality is kind of like just not there. All you know how to do is just communicate very simply. I'll put it like that. And people are like, well, you know, there were other foreigners where you lived. I mean, there was like a handful. I mean, I think I could count them on both hands. And I think people also need to realize just because you two are immigrants, they're from another country, you're from a different country, you guys don't have much in common besides being an immigrant. And so, yeah, it's still isolating. I think that's something that really stuck with me in general is that I'm super, you know, I try to accommodate immigrants in my own country now because I know how difficult it is to be isolated and be here alone. But to circle back to that question, I just knew the loneliness would get to you no matter how much they tried to make it seem like you weren't alone, you would definitely feel alone and it would eat at you a little bit. So I wasn't shocked when you left. I was kind of shocked that they kept messaging me over and over trying to get me to come back. And the whole time I was there, they just treated me like the odd man out. You know, they just treated me like they didn't really want me to be there, that they were only accommodating me because they wanted you. And then when you weren't there, they were like, oh, please come back. And no, oh, sorry. And I do feel like the reason they treated me like that was race played a large part in it. Especially when they told me, one of the things that they told me was I didn't have the look they needed, which, I mean, come on. But, yeah, it wasn't all bad. Had a lot of good times. Would I do it again? Yeah, I would do it again because it was definitely an experience. And, would I teach at that school again? Oh, no. Mm-mm. I'm good.
Right.
I'm good. Love and joy.
We could definitely tell that, it was a bit racially motivated, and that put the biggest bad taste in my mouth. That's not how we do things in America. It was mid-June, and at this point, I had been in China over 3 months, and I decided to make my escape. I began searching for flights and found out that all flights after the following Monday were over $1,000, and the prices kept rising all the way to the next March. Faced with this dilemma, the realization of what was truly important came to mind. Was it my students? Was it China? Was it America? Travel? No, it was family. Family is where home is, and I needed to be there. I finally found one last ticket for $777. Yes, that was the price. This seat had just randomly came open. I'm not a huge believer in, like, everything happens for a reason, nor religion per se. But that was quite a miraculous happening. It was my only hope because I only had about $800 after paying my bills and child support. I had a girl I was dating help me get a train ticket to out of Yingkou to the nearest train station to get to the airport. And you needed a Chinese passport to get one. Anthony and I called this my midnight run. I rode through the night heading towards Beijing Airport, arriving early in the morning. My plane for Detroit began boarding right as my agent Susie called. I could tell she was suspicious as she asked me where my boss was. I told her I wasn't sure and said, you know, let me check, and kind of stalled. And finally she said, did you leave? And I said, yeah. And she said, well, tell me the truth. Did you leave because you didn't like him or because your mother is really sick? The truth I was leaving is because I didn't like him, but my mother had also fallen, had a black eye and broke wrist. So I hung up and boarded the plane. Once in Detroit, I was hit with a barrage of texts threatening to sue me, saying, oh, we can take these cases to America, but I knew they couldn't touch me. I was safe on American soil. I headed back to Memphis, and I was picked up by my parents finally. It was a happy moment to see them. Somehow it looked like they had aged 10 years since I was gone, though, and that was sad to see. From there, I drove the car and went straight back to Jackson, and the first place I had to stop was Taco Bell, because there was not a Taco Bell anywhere in Yingkou. There was 4 KFCs within 2 blocks. There was a McDonald's 30 minutes away. They were building a Burger King and a Starbucks. But there was no Taco Bell. I think the closest Taco Bell was like Shanghai. Anyways, I'll calm down. My second day was a sunny early morning on a Thursday. I made sure to make my arrival a secret until that day. So I drove down to Montana School, my daughter, and I walked through the halls going to pick her up. Her mother had let her teacher know, so her teacher was recording this. I peeked in the door and saw her teacher. She gave me the wink, letting me know that she knew what was up. I stood in the doorway, and Montana was playing with other kids. Suddenly, she turned around, and her eyes grew wide. She paused for about 2 seconds and then sprinted towards me, crashing into my knees. Now you know, we have to save the best gas for last. So Montana, tell everyone what it feels like to be the daughter of someone that travels abroad to teach English and is gone for a really long time. And how'd it feel when I finally came back home?
To begin with, I didn't realize it would be for as long as it was, I guess because I was so young. I was about 8 or 9. And, you know, it was... things don't set in the same as when you're older. And so whenever you're gone for so long, it did not seem real. I spent most of my days here watching Minecraft or playing video games. And it, whenever we were on calls, it always cut out. It was never good because of how far away it was. And the connection was very bad. When you came back, you walked up to the door, and I looked back, and it felt like a movie because it was like I was hallucinating, you know? You're standing in the door, and I was just going about my day in my summer camp. And I walked towards the teacher, and we were talking about you and how you were in China. And I saw you at the door, and I thought, Wow, my imagination is going wild now that I'm thinking about him. And I turned back to the teacher to continue my conversation and saw in the corner of my eye that you were not gone and that you were really there. And I ran towards you and gave you a hug. And all the kids in the class were looking at me and they didn't realize what was happening. And then we went home. And yeah, that's basically how it happened.
That's how I remember it happening. So, I still hated Jackson, Tennessee, but nonetheless, I felt at home. I searched around the world, but I could finally tell that no feat, large or small, would match the duties and privilege I have as a father. Now I know. I want to thank everybody for listening and making it this far. Shout out to Anthony at the Not Another Horror Podcast. Check him out. It's the best by far. Subscribe to the Take Flight Teaching Podcast and learn how to travel abroad, get tips and tricks, maximize your financial gains, and learn how to invest your money a little bit. Once again, thank you. And then John Melton, signing out.
Stop me long.